right, welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. Now, I know some of you have called over the last several months thinking that Mitch Daniels is running again. He's not. He can't run again. The Indiana Constitution says you get 8 years and that's it. You're done. You know, go fishing in the White River somewhere. So there will be a new governor of Indiana. It will either be, and there's only three parties on the ballot. Democrat, that's John Gregg. Republican, that's Mike Pence. And the Libertarian Party. And their candidate, official candidate, nominated on the ballot, ready to go, is Rupert Bonham. Yes, the guy who was on a couple of islands on Survivor, who took what he won and plowed it back into the community. No houses on the south of France. He is here in a sport coat, but he's got the tie-dyed golf shirt on. He is the candidate for governor of Indiana, the Libertarian Party. With that, we welcome for the first time to the microphones Rupert Bonham. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
So why are you running?
You know, I saw a few years ago the opportunity for me to actually make a really big change here in the state. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at the Democrat and the Republican candidates and thinking, you know, I think I should run. Mm-hmm. And I talked to my wife, I talked to my daughter, I talked to my mother and told them, you know, we're going to pick a side, but we're picking the Libertarian side and we're going to try and make a difference in the state of Indiana.
What would a Governor Rupert Bonham do? I mean, there have been third-party candidates or non-Democrat or Republican candidates as our nation's governor. Minnesota, obviously, was mm-hmm. one with Jesse Ventura. Right. Either Maine, I believe, has been another one that's had an independent candidate, independent governor, is at least a second one. Arizona with that, I think, Governor Meacham, I think, was one party, then he went independent. So this is not unusual among governors in terms of states. What kind of priorities would a Rupert Bonham do as governor?
You know, the first priority, honestly, is looking really truly at the state constitution and mm-hmm. making sure that everything that we are doing here in the state is actually constitutional. Mm-hmm. Starting to look, you know, as you know, I've been working 20 years in the correctional facilities here in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And looking at the dollars spent in some of our biggest expenditures, you know, with the public schools, with the detention centers, mm-hmm. Showing the empowerment that it would bring back and the restructuring of dollars, moving money. Never have we cut from the top down. Mm-hmm. We always cut from the bottom up. I would start doing some restructuring of dollars and taking from administration and putting into program. You know, bringing our state actually to a point where we all can feel good about the way we're spending our dollars and we see those empowerment programs actually working. Bringing our state really back to a true constitutional state that gives our people our freedoms.
One of the things, I know you work with folks who've made a mistake in their lives and are trying to turn their lives around, and that has been a theme on this program since the first weeks 9 years ago. How do we do that in a state where a year ago the governor thought and the then commissioner of corrections thought they could reduce the dollars spent on incarceration, that they could mm-hmm. release into halfway houses or home detention nonviolent felons who pose really no real threat to society because the fastest growing part of the state budget other than education is correction. They thought they could do that, and all of a sudden 92 county prosecutors got the willies, some legislators got the willies, and what the governor wanted to do, he could not do. How do we change the mentality of this state and go back to what we're taught in church? And that is redemption and forgiveness.
You know, the way the correctional facilities truly were set up was to rehabilitate mm-hmm. and reintegrate into society people that have lost their way. Unfortunately, and, you know, I'm reading in the state constitution right now. Every chance I get a minute, I read the Indiana
Constitution. You're really reading this thing. Okay.
And I am seeing where the punishment is supposed to match the crime. Mm-hmm. In our state, it's not truly so, where we have so many people in prison for hurting themselves. Mm. You know, I am proposing that nonviolent and first-time offenders go into a probationary period, go into a drug and alcohol treatment, go into a work program, but stay in society with help and supervision, but keep working instead of incarcerating the nonviolent offender with a violent offender and creating a bigger problem.
239-1310, 239-1310. You can send me a text message at 85620, keyword Amos, or you can go online to praiseindy.com, send me an email message. Rupert Bonham is one of the three candidates for governor. So when they have the debates this fall, there's going to be three televised debates, one in the northern part of the state, one in the central part, and one in the southern part. He's going to be one of the three that you'll see on television. One of the things libertarians believe very strongly that government needs to be as minimally intrusive in people's lives as possible.
Correct.
Yet one of the big things that comes back on this program is the problem of not the people who make the mistake. They've turned their lives around. Some have given their lives to Christ. Mm-hmm. Others have given their lives to other faiths. They are serious about not wanting to backslide, and they can't find a job, or they've been clean for 10, 15, 20 years, and they're getting ding-donged with these background checks.
Right.
From a libertarian philosophy, how can a Governor Rupert Bonham work with the business community to overcome these fears, or the fears that lawyers have put on on businesses, not to give folks a chance? I can understand a business being skittish for somebody that just got out of jail for doing something. But somebody that's 10 years clean and
exactly.
You're still getting ding-dong, to me, that raises a civil rights issue, a human rights issue, and potential bigotry.
Exactly right. When you are released from incarceration, it gives society that ability to discriminate against you, discriminate on housing, discriminate on employment, to discriminate against you. Even, like you say, after 10 years, what I would love to see would be some kind of absolution reform, some kind of program that after 10 years with no infractions, no parking, no speeding tickets, no arrests, that your record is clean.
Mm-hmm.
So you do not have to pay for the rest of your life. But I will say, being able to show our participants in our program that are coming out of the detention centers, when you are that best worker, when you have those, not only the work skills, but the soft skills, those social skills, and you're willing to do the hardest job out there, that is sometimes how you get your foot in the door. You know, I have to mention McAllister's Deli. They have been great. A few years ago, they started a program with us where they are willing to overlook a felony, to overlook somebody's past, because they know not one of us have made all the right choices.
239-1310, 239-1310. Let me go to the phones, and he's going to get inaugurated as a candidate because he's got to talk to the Larry at 239-1310. Hi, Larry.
How are you doing, Amos?
I'm fine.
Ruthert. You're talking a good game as well that the libertarians do. But after you get rid of all the people and give them some kind of a pardon so they don't have to deal with their felonies, and after they get out of prison, it's like they have a new thing. What are you going to do with all the vultures that are hanging around the edges that was getting that money? We have came to a point where we depend on misfortune and disease so much for our economy, even in states, that how will you deal with the vultures if you end some of these programs?
Well, I have to say that when we have our men and women coming out of the detention center, that is a very vulnerable time when you are trying to find housing and trying to find employment. One of the ways that we've had such great success with our program is even after you are released from probation or detention, we still keep in contact with you. We still, because we start out as the first employer. And that is the proposal that I have. That's some of the legislation that we're writing right now in our office in case, in hopes that I do become governor. I need to have a program in place day one that when you walk out of the detention center, you are already in line for a place to live that is safe and secure and a job to go to. Not a mandatory job, but a job. If you are ready and you want to go to work, there are work. There is work out there. I've had work programs working with Department of Public Works, Parks program, and right. We're starting a new program in the code enforcement where we are starting to take over 600 abandoned board up properties. We will be creating out of some of these harder properties affordable living for our participants and the ability to make a legal living and not having to depend on anyone else.
239-1310, 239-1310's afternoon's name with Rupert Bronham, the Libertarian candidate for governor. Before we take a break, somebody didn't want to go on the air, but they asked the question numero uno. How does a Rupert Bonham bring jobs to Indiana, not just to the older neighborhoods here in Marion County, but to these older neighborhoods of these other towns across our state?
We have been traveling the state for the last, seven, 8 months. Mm-hmm. Since October, we announced. Up north, we are talking to some of the communities there. I've got a proposal to create those smaller smelting shops, the smaller steel mills that just create the rebar and the reinforced steel for us to use in our roads in Indiana, in our buildings in Indiana. Down south, talking to a lot of the tobacco farmers, a lot of the farmers that are struggling with crops down there with almost no industry, bringing industry and new crops in that we can create actually products.
As you went out to the real parts of Indiana,
right,
outside this beltway, were you surprised at some of the things you saw?
You know, I grew up in Kokomo, Indiana, okay, when in Delco and Chrysler's history back in the late 70s, early 80s, we were struggling then also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had, for those of us that were under 25, it was like a 17% unemployment rate in Kokomo back in the day. The same thing that some of my participants are dealing with now. And, you know, even in some of the groups, a 40% unemployment rate.
Mm-hmm.
Being surprised, no. Being impressed by the way the strength of so many Hoosiers out there that are really struggling, but finding those ways to actually make it, working together with others, and that's where I know we will have the ability to work with our community and create a stronger Indiana.
239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoons with Amos. His first appearance on the program won't be the last. He's the Libertarian candidate for governor, Rupert Bonham. See, now I've had the Democratic candidate. We're having the Libertarian candidate. Somebody start telling Mike Pence what you afraid of. I can Rupert. There's no snakes or
nope.
or water or rocks or probes coming out of the
nope,
wall.
No tribal
here,
council.
No. So Mike Pence, what are you afraid of? It's Afternoons with Amos with Rupert. After these 239-1310, 239-1310. Afternoons with Amos. Back to the phones and Tom. Hi there.
How are you?
Fine.
I had a question. Have gone through the Department of Correction in the past for driving offense. It seems as though minor offenses, they're incarcerating people for minor offenses. Once they serve their time, they pay their debt to society, they come back out. They're right back where they started from. They're still in a situation where they have no license. They're trying to work. They're trying to provide for their families. What do you do to help those that are really trying to make a transition to be a add to the community? You know, not trying to take away, but just trying to add to the community. Like, you know, just minor offenses, you know, but because of it, they just keep growing and growing and growing. They become major offenses. So what do you do?
All right, let me let the candidate answer.
One of the things that I talk to my young men and women about in our program is that steady slide in the system. Once they've got their hands on you, once you're into the system, it is a tough thing to get out of the system, because not only do you have the problems when you went in, like you say, but once you're released, then you still have to face all those, but you've got the baggage now of the arrest or two or three behind you. Being able to create those programs in the incarceration program with the probation officer that actually creates a situation where a person can go back to work legally, where you can get your hardship license back just to be able to go to work, back and forth to work, where you can be able to make that legal living. So many of us are released from incarceration. So many people are released without that ability to make a legal living. And then you have to be paying your court fees. You have to be paying your probation fees, your electronic monitoring. Mm-hmm. Just not paying that will put you back in prison. So instead of in a situation where we're so overcrowded in the prisons, why aren't we creating work programs, you know? I mean, we've got hundreds of acres of parks that need mowed, that are not getting mowed, and we don't have the dollars to do it. We've got thousands of properties in town that are distressed, abandoned, boarded up, that cost us money. We have people that will go to work. Mm-hmm. But we've got to create the situation to let people go back to work legally. You know, the driver's license, I would say, RubrensKids.org is a great resource. There are different resources out there to help you try and work for that hardship license.
239-1310, 239-1310. Back to the phones, and Brenda. Hi there.
Hi, Amos. How are you doing today, sir?
Fine.
Hello, Mr. Rupert. How are you today?
I'm wonderful.
Great, sir. I have a couple of questions to ask you.
Okay.
Because you are running for governor, and I hope to see some great things coming from your office.
Oh, thank you.
The question I have for you is, would you be willing to do an audit of special education dollars coming into the state? That's one question. Would you consider looking at special education reform in the state? And would you also be willing to crunch the numbers in terms of the number of juveniles with disabilities who are being referred to the juvenile justice system?
100%. I have been in the mental health field for 27 years. I started out in the institutions down in Texas. Being able to put all of our budgets on the internet, we are in the 21st century. We should know every dollar that we spend as Indiana, and we should be able to see that. Those are our dollars. One of the reasons why we don't trust our government is there are so many back rooms, so many closed door deals. I would love to put every budget on the internet. Being able to review the special education, the different categories in our educational system, and see how we can. You are talking to someone that cares very deeply for the empowerment of all of our citizens. So reviewing that and knowing that, you know, just like years ago when we closed down Central State, and that top 8%, I think, of what I called the walking wounded, we opened the doors and let them walk out the doors with no help and no assistance. I know for a fact that in our juvenile detention center, we have a problem of the mental health issues misdiagnosed as, aggression problems or anger problems or different problems. We have to do a little better with our special ed.
239-1310, 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. We pay now, the taxpayers of all of Indiana are paying 100% of the basic cost of K through 12 education in this state. From your campaign's perspective, what are your views on our public education?
Our public education, I think, honestly, it is not as bad as everybody thinks, because it is a situation that honestly is very salvageable. We've got a few school corporations that are really struggling and dragging all the state down. But across the state, there are a lot of great school corporations. Now, I have to say, though, every time we do a budget cut, We always look at program and we don't look at administration.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do some budget cutting. If we do any budget cutting in the education, it will never come from program in my terms. It will come from administration.
It will come from the muckety-mucks.
It will come from the top down, and we will build from the bottom up.
Are you also the education philosophy of this state over the last definitely 8 years, maybe to include the second half of O'Bannon and Kernan, so call it the last 12 to 16 years, is, you know, everybody either ought to go to college or ought to be the new buzzword, work ready. Is that something you endorse, or do we need to look, you know, for those that want to attend college, you know, great, but those that want to be bricklayers, which I think make a lot more than I'm sitting here making, and some other things, get the education necessary so that if a computer is telling you how many bricks does it take to build a wall, you at least know how to operate the computer to tell you that.
You know, showing young men and women that that person turning that screwdriver powering that electrical box is getting $25 an hour. That mason, that bricklayer, is getting $20-$30 an hour. Showing people. I have said for years, we need really three groups coming out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
A group going off to college, yes, definitely. A group going into the IT, into the computer skills. Having someone go into college for a computer degree makes no sense to me when you're taking a four-year college program. After the second year, what you learned the first year is already starting to become obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
Creating those computer programs and those six-month trainings in our public schools and putting people to work in the computer industries, and as well as the industrial arts and home arts, we have eliminated those from the high schools. The trades, the unions used to have 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 people a day walking in trying to join the unions. They do not anymore. We are not teaching people how to work with their hands. Yes, having people work ready. I don't know if they understand what that is, really. For 20 years, I have been teaching people that have never worked a legal day in their life. A lot of them come to us that have never been able to read and write. How to go to work, how to be work ready. I would love to get our schools to that point, too.
Is it something that, and then going on to the college, we've got a situation where it is cheaper to buy a Mercedes-Benz than it is to send a kid now to Purdue or IU with the full freight. The current governor has tried to jawbone the major state universities into lowering tuition. It really doesn't work. How does a Governor Rupert deal with this rising cost of higher education, which is rising higher than the rate of inflation, even higher than the price of gasoline?
It's outrageous how high it has gotten. And university never was supposed to be a for-profit industry. You know, it really can never be there. And to see, like I say, in the 21st century, why aren't every textbook on the Kindle, every kid's walking around with the pad or a Kindle or a notebook or something in their hand, having every textbook be electronically given to them instead of paying hundreds of dollars for your books. Having some of our classrooms being taught on the internet, linking classrooms together where you're sharing a teacher with multiple classrooms. Figuring out different ways to create an affordable education. Cutting the mindset back to education being the basis, not the dollar. We've got to get it back there.
In terms of bringing jobs to Indiana, we've had instances where we have to, the old school of thumb, you know, to get water out of a pump, you got to prime the pump.
Right.
Sometimes you have to spend a little money to make money. What is your philosophy on paying to get jobs, in other words, and paying by reducing taxes, providing tax abatements, tax breaks? You get in these competitions with us.
Right.
Say New York says, hey, I'll give you $20 million to bring your jobs here. And somebody in Pennsylvania says, I'll give you $20 million and I'll throw in a baseball team. In all of this negotiation, it's sort of similar to what you did on television where you had to make those alliances. to get over? Do we have to play survivor to get the jobs necessary for our state to survive, or how would you do it?
I do not think playing that game of giving is any way at all of bringing companies to Indiana. Mm-hmm. Being that company, being that state that gives the tax abatements, gives the deferred land, the to the biggest of big companies. Mm-hmm. And then ignores the smaller companies, the mid-level companies, the mom-and-pop shops that are just down the road from these big boys but are paying 100% of their taxes, paying 100% of their employees, and struggling. I would more than giving the prebates and giving, you know, deferred property taxes. Yeah. How about we give rebates? If you've paid your taxes, if you've paid your fair share, right, and you did what you said, you hired these 1,000 employees, you put back into the community, you did what you actually said, then maybe giving you a rebate on your taxes. But I am that one that would say, I would like to stand up and say, tax abatements really do not bring new business in.
Back to the phones at 239-1310, and Mike, hi there.
Hi, good afternoon, Amos.
Good afternoon.
And good afternoon to you there, Mr. Rupert.
Good afternoon.
So, you know, I remember seeing you on the TV show and all that. I have something in my hand right now. It's the Constitution of the United States of America. In the parable, it says, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, insurance, democracy,
Domestic tranquility, too. Provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure our blessings of our liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America. Yes, sir.
He pulled out his pocket of the Constitution, by the way.
But I have that by memory.
He's got that by memory, too.
Yes. But you know what, though, Mr. Murdoch, Rupert?
Yes, sir.
I had called in to ask you another question.
Yes, sir.
But after hearing you speak, I'm going to ask you that question when I get through with this, because, first of all, I want a number to be able to get in contact with you, and I want to know how many foot soldiers, first of all, that you have established in this state to go about this task, because it's not a small task that you're doing.
Running for governor is a big task, is a daunting task, and I do not have millions of dollars behind me, so I will need millions of people behind me. We are starting to build that ground force, that group of supporters that are ready for a change in Indiana. And you can get a hold of me, Rupert at rupertforgovernor.com comes right to me.
Okay. Another thing, too, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay. We are living in a judgment society, you know?
Yes.
I in my lifetime, I have been pulled over driving while black, you know? Even at one time in my lifetime, I had a gun drawn from IPD downtown on
right.
Illinois.
Right.
You know, in the middle of the street while I was crossing the street. Sir, As you go around in your tie-dye shirt,
mm-hmm,
and with your beard,
right,
looking like you just stepped out of the cave, that you can do one of those Deco commercials or
yes,
Deco
sir.
Commercials.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Are you asking? Have I ever been?
What do you look like in a suit and a tie, man? What's the one I'm getting at?
I am still me in a suit and tie. I will say, though, I have been that one also profiled as the, there's a hairy, scary one that looks a little dangerous. We better pull him over. We better check him out. We better search him. We better stop. Mm. I want to go back to a constitutional, a fair and level playing field for all of us. If I am not breaking the law, I expect you to leave me alone, no matter if I have a burqa on, if I have a shorts and a tank top on, if I have a suit and tie on, no matter what color my skin is, no matter what I am wearing. If I am breaking the law, then you have a right to stop me.
One thing I say to you, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right, I appreciate it.
God bless you.
All righty. 239-1310, 239-1310. We'll take a break. We'll be back with our remaining moments with Rupert Bonham, the Libertarian candidate for governor, tomorrow. We'll talk about autism. We'll talk about a program that talks about Birmingham back in the civil rights days. It's going to be at the library. There's going to be an effort to bring health to the barbershop this Saturday. James Garrett of the State Commission on the Social Status of African-American Males will be with us. Plus, the head of the Indiana Civil Rights Commission will be with us. And if that's not enough tomorrow, an exclusive radio interview with legendary Hall of Fame broadcaster Dan Rather. That's tomorrow.
Wow.
So you better be here. Yeah. Dr. Ian Smith on Thursday. And then Friday, we're going to early voting. We're going to scare them to death. We'll be live at the county clerk's office because here in Marion County, one out of every four voters has a different location than where you voted the last time you voted. Hey, the mayor did it. Wasn't my fault. It's After News with Amos After These. Got a text message at 85620, keyword Amos. Said, Libertarians hate taxes. How is Rupert going to pay for all this?
You know, honestly, if we start doing the restructuring of our dollars, if we look at, like we were talking about, the correctional facilities right. And stop locking up people that are just hurting themselves and put them into work programs and probation programs, think about the savings we would have to the city, to the state. If we started restructuring our school dollars and moving some of those administration dollars back into program and empowering our state, if some of the 300 other plus agencies, okay, let me just say this. When I walk in on day one to my administration of governor and look at the administration and say, we're knocking 20% out of the dollars we spend and I'm putting 20% of my payroll, my paycheck back into the state.
Mm.
Then I turn around to the other 300 plus agencies and say, it's your turn. If you cannot figure out how you take 20% out of the administration, never program, only administration, I will.
As you've gone around the state, obviously, you know, 4 years ago, Indiana had a better than average turnout for presidential year. This is the one year. This is the one election where most Americans come out. What are you hearing? Are people engaged in this? Is it the economy and jobs issue one? What are people telling you?
You know, they're telling me a few things. One of the things that I am hearing every day is, and I heard it on the way here, Rupert, I'm voting for you. Rupert, you are going to be the first candidate that I ever felt very strongly about voting for. I am hearing it from people that have been so disillusioned that they haven't voted in years. But I also am hearing that the economy, making that fair and level playing field where the government, the law enforcement, the big business, small business, everybody has the same playing field. What's fair for one should be fair for all.
How's your family feel about this?
You know, we've been celebrities for eight, nine years since I first went out and did Survivor. My mother will tell you, my wife will tell you now, these fans have become so empowering. They're walking up to my mother saying, I love your son. You tell him I'm voting for him. They're walking up to my daughter saying, you tell your dad that we hope he becomes our next governor.
The fact that you have been in the public eye.
Right.
Does that help you in this campaign because you're now used to it? You know, some people that run for office that maybe aren't career politicians or previous libertarian candidates, and they've been some great ones, and no disrespect to them, getting out there in the public eye is a little different. This is you've done this. You've been to this rodeo.
Oh, yes. I've been thrown on stage in front of thousands, tens of thousands of people. I've had, you know, the cameras chasing us around. I've been put on the spot. Now, I will say the political world is a little different.
Right.
You know, it counts more what you say. I like showing that everything I am saying is coming from my heart. These are all statements that I believe that we will do. Being that person that is, you know, tested, has I had the $1 million put in my hand. We gave back to our community. I've had those tests of, you know, fame and fortune. We stay here in Indiana. That's what we want.
Have you heard from any of your fellow contestants saying, hey, Rupert, I heard you're running for governor. You know, here's $50.
You know, some of those Survivor contestants, little Johnny Fairplay who lied about his grandmother, Richard Hatch who...
You don't want him anywhere near.
All these torn people, they're a little jealous, you know? We've had a few that have actually supported, and like Holly from one of the past contestants came and supported us through the Super Bowl, and... You know, we've had a lot of great phone calls and a few good checks.
Our standard closing question with all candidates this election year, if people want more information about your campaign, he's the Libertarian candidate for governor, Rupert Bonham. How do people get a hold of you?
RupertForGovernor.com. And please, you can get all our contact info. If you want to stop in our office, we're at 129 East Market, you know, a couple blocks away. Walk right in, bang on that door, say, I'm here, I'm ready to help.
This is... the earliest in the cycle that we've had a Libertarian candidate for governor. Usually Libertarians wait till like June or June-ish. They nominated you right after the Super Bowl.
Oh, yes.
You guys are serious about this.
Oh, yes. I announced in October.
In October. Y'all are serious. This is serious business.
We set up our campaign headquarters in November. We are very serious. I am. I know I am not going to have the dollars to buy the TV ads, so I am traveling this state. Every day I am in somewhere else in front of new people, showing who I am, saying what I am willing to do for the state and what I have done in the past.
And the beard is going from now until November. Because that's you.
Oh, yes. You know, if you're going to look at the outside, if you're just looking at the exterior, you know, you're going to get what you get.
But I'm trying to figure out for the TV debates, is he really going to have a tie-dye dress shirt or a regular dress shirt and the tie-dye tie?
We got all kinds of tie-dye.
See, that's the tune-in factor alone. What's Rupert going to look like? How's John Gregg going to – what's the mustache going to be? Yep. And how is Mike Pence going to handle the two? This could be, you know, an election where people really get engaged. Everybody's going to be engaged in the presidential race.
Oh, yes.
We don't know, however, the Senate comes out. They'll be engaged in that. They'll be engaged in the governor, and it'll be a great debate on the future of Indiana. You're welcome back here anytime, Rupert Bonham. He is the Libertarian candidate for governor of Indiana. Thanks very much for being with us.